Yes, hello, we are back. We begin to discuss an unprecedented 170th game of the 2023 season. It's still going.
It's like it never left. I thought about it last night, but then I forgot to do it. I was going to get my phone to play the We Tried Nothing Board of Ideas audio. And that's what I was going to do before I spoke. And I just remembered that.
Tough one.
Yeah.
Tough one.
That didn't happen. So now you'd hear me say that I forgot.
The explanation of the bit sometimes is as good as the bit. Sometimes not, but sometimes.
All jokes are better if you explain them, I think.
Yeah, especially if you explain them instead of doing them. That's the number one.
In a lot of detail.
Boy, what fools were we to think that it might be different. I mean, listen, it's been seven games. They have a mere 155 games to turn things around. And there could have been, you know, timing is everything. There could have been a game that we came on after post the Rays series Sunday or opener on Thursday. And we'd say, you know, things feel okay. Two games good, two games bad. The offense was good when it was good. The offense was bad when it was bad. And then the Houston series happened, and they got no hit, and then they got one hit. And in between, they scored two runs and won a game 2-1. So they scored two runs in three games. They combined for 0.5 hits per game in the losses, 0.66 runs per game in the series. It sure feels an awful lot like last year felt. I will, of course, as I said, it's been seven games, 155 to go. I don't blame anybody that is feeling exasperated, even though knowing I fully do believe, not that it's going to be okay, but like there's a lot of baseball left. But boy, it sure felt very bad to be a part of the first week of the season.
Yeah, I mean, all things you said are true. And I think what's trying to think how to phrase this. Yeah, like obviously, factually, realistically, it's only been seven games.
Yes.
It's very early. However, that opinion and that statement also assumes that all things exist in a vacuum. And that there is no before and only now, which unfortunately is just not the case. And as you said, it's, you know, game 180 of the 2023 season. And I'm not even going to say in a normal year, because there's nothing really abnormal about this. But for a different team, let's say, after seven games, or even this same team last year, after seven games, you'd kind of be like, eh, whatever, it's seven games. But the fact that it is coupled with 164 games from last season, and then obviously the offseason with minimal additions on the offensive side of the ball, more or less the same roster, it certainly does give credence to the they're just not very good offensively, at least, argument. And I am certainly not going to begrudge anyone for thinking that based on context, while keeping in mind, yeah, it's only seven games, but I would also argue that it's not only seven games.
Sure doesn't feel like only seven games. Again, even though it is factually only seven games and there is plenty of room to go up, it's so disappointing to be because there's nothing to do in the like it'll be okay spot other than say the exact same things that we said all year last year, right?
Yeah,
to say exactly. Like, hey, as bad as it was, they're 3-4, which is true again. As bad as it was, you know, there's a lot of signs, or as bad as it was, they're still drawing walks and they're still getting some process right. It's a very, listen, the vibes are all time low, pretty much, I think, is the thing. There are a lot of people that were waiting. Like, there's a lot of people that I think were waiting to get their Atkins offseason takes off and got a great opportunity to do it very early. Mm-hmm. Part of this is how disappointing it is for this to happen in the first week of the season, because you've usually bought a lot of goodwill, or you're not, you know, a lot of people are paying attention in this first week because they're happy to have baseball back. And, you know, if this had happened even in May, I think it feels a little bit less like, oh my God, here we go again. But it being the literal first seven games, it being literally the second series where they score one run, or they score two runs and they have one hit combined over two games, it compounds the feeling. And it definitely does feel like we went straight from the Twins series to the Astros series, and that like nothing happened in between. The timing and optics are certainly one to squash any good feeling that you might have had coming out of the Tampa series. And listen, I get it. I don't want to try to explain away. And we talked about this last year about how, like, in a way, doing the record's pretty good thing makes it more annoying and not less annoying. I'm trying to be cognizant of that, while also, of course, saying, like, you know, it was seven games, but yeah, it feels like 170 games. It feels like you want to say hard to believe that this could be happening again, but the actual issue is it's almost too easy to believe that the exact same thing is happening with largely the exact same core in exactly the same way in basically the exact same situations. Not too much fun, that's for sure.
Yeah, I actually, you know, from a God, I don't want to say an analyst, because that's not what we are.
No.
From a taking off my fan hat for a minute, let's say, objectively, let's say, I disagree with the notion that there's still time for it to go up. I'm not saying they're, like, doomed. That's not what I mean. But I don't think this is surprising at all. I think what is happening is the simplest result of the last 6 months. It's, you know, arguably the same roster, give or take your Kiner Falefas and your Justin Turner, who is the best hitter on the team. And I don't know how you objectively look at the roster today and the roster that lost to Minnesota and go, oh, of course they'll be better. Like, to me, this is obvious. To me, this is, of course, it's the same issues. It's the whole notion why people, myself included, got upset at Atkins' sort of "we're banking on internal improvements" argument. Because they haven't really given us any reason to believe that would be the case. Like, you can hope, and baseball is a game of regression, I'll give you that. But also, we just watched this team for 164 games. And them coming out of the gate doing the same thing, to me, is like, well, of course. Like, there's nothing. Arguably, they're a worse offensive team on paper than they were last year. And, you know, if you want to dial it back 2 years ago to before the Teoscar and Lourdes trades and the play the right way stuff, of course the offense is worse. The offense is worse. Like, I think obviously it's very easy to get excited by spring. It's easy to get excited by baseball being back, and it's easy to come out of spring training into a new season with rose-colored glasses and be excited, and you should do that. It's no fun to be a naysayer from minute one, unless that's your bit, in which case get a new bit. But again, objectively looking at this, it's kind of like, of course, this is what's happening. This makes sense. This was arguably, and again, putting the fan hat back on, it's 7 games. There's lots of time to improve. But like this, I don't think this should be surprising anybody. And I think that's the root of a lot of the frustration right now, because it is so obvious. Like, and you know, like you said, it's the same arguments as last year. It's still the same, boy, they need, like, whether you want to call it that fourth outfielder spot or whatever, just that the actual hitters kind of thing. And, you know, maybe Davis Schneider is that, but then they're not playing him. And maybe Ernie Clement has potential to give that a juice, but he's also not an everyday guy. And so it's sort of like, you know, through 7 games, Kevin Biggio is the third best hitter on the team, which, as fun as it is to be Biggio pilled, that's, you're probably not going to win a lot of games if that's the case. And so I just, as frustrated, it's frustrating because it was so, coming out of last season, it feels like this all could have been avoided. And obvious, like taking Shohei out of it entirely. Just like, because that clearly at this point, obviously that wasn't going to happen. But not, you know, I think it's very instructive that the one free agent, pure hitter they went out and signed is the best hitter on the team so far. And it's like, wow, when you should do that more. Maybe the guys you have aren't the guys to get it done.
I wish it wasn't going like this. I really do, because
yeah, I agree.
I don't want to already be having these conversations because it's pretty crappy, because this, it was like last year also, the one free agent bat they went out and got basically ended up being the best hitter in Brandon Belt. Yeah, they just have a way, and I think the no-hitter game really did illustrate this. They have a way of just looking like they have, I don't want to say given up, but they folded up pretty bad in that no-hitter game. And they haven't just lost, right? They haven't just lost. They've lost 8-2. They lost 10-0. They lost 8-0. And they lost 5-1. They've gotten the doors blown off when they lose. And when they lose, it's sort of like becomes pretty clear, pretty evident, pretty quickly that they are not going to come back in these games. I know that it's easy to do after the fact, but I'll give you the no-hitter game for example. Like, yeah, the guy was locked in. Ronald Blanco was locked in. He pitched very well. He also had he also had one strikeout after the fifth inning. After the fourth inning, pardon me. He got a strikeout in the fourth, and then it was like ground out, pop out, ground out, pop out. He got a strikeout in the top of the seventh on Vladdy, and then everything else is lazy fly ball, foul pop out, ground out, terrible at bat. Like, they're just throwing these at bats away. Like, it's really, when they get down, they seem to not believe that they are going to come back. Which is like really disappointing. And throughout the course of the Astros series, beyond just the nuts and bolts of the amount of hits or the amount of runs, like just terrible approaches all around, like 2 and 3 pitch at bats over and over again, 8-pitch innings, no real concern, guys come up and go down, and no real approach, no real concern, no real battle. That part of it for me has been pretty disappointing. It's one thing, to lose 4 of your first 7 games. Teams do that all the time. It's one thing to get no hit. That happens all the time. Not all the time, but it happens to teams. It's another thing to get shut out. They're so lifeless. There's such a lack of energy when they are not playing well. That is like, really truly palpable. I'm trying to be wary of the, like, you know, the basketball team is losing and suddenly they have bad body language, and it's like, yeah, because it sucks to lose. And yeah, I don't expect them to be loving not being able to hit, but it really just seems like they are just folding up in some of these approaches and just offering absolutely nothing for like half hours at a time at the plate. It's crazy. It's right to call out Turner, because at least he generally manages to have decent at-bats. Bo and Vlad are throwing at-bats away in big spots. And, you know, Kim Ayers looked terrible, like really terrible. Varsho, all the things that we saw in spring, all of them seem to be gone. Kiner Falefa is doing what he can with a very limited skill set. Schneider had the big hit in the series, and Springer continues to attack mistake pitches the way he has, but they're just not giving you, there just hasn't been any reason as a fan to look at it and be like, well, they're on the cusp, they're battling, this is happening here and this is happening here. There's really been nothing. Like, Kirk has struggled. Again, nice to see Clement, nice to see Turner and Davis with the big swing, and then the benching, which whatever, but also like symptomatic of, and this has been the case for the last couple of years, and what we talk about with this team as a regime, of just like a real dissonance between a stick to the plan sort of thing and understanding the flow of what's happening. I think this is the underlying problem with that people have with a lot of parts of the team, is there seems to be a real disconnect between like what is able to make sense. And I get it, we're the fans. They don't have to build the team around what the fans think. They don't have to build the decisions around what make the fans happy. But
they shouldn't.
But also, like, you have to know the kick in the butt you're setting yourself up for like, Schneider hits a home run in a big spot with two out in the ninth to win the game, and the very next day you don't play him. And fine enough, guys have routines, guys have matchups. That's why they do all the numbers. But to then call out specifically like, oh, we love the Kiner Falefa and Biggio matchups, it's just like, ah, oh, you know the like obvious rake you're about to step on, and like, it's very clearly not going to work. Both those guys are very clearly going to go over in the next game in your 8-9 hole. It's troubling. It's really not fun. And more than anything else, it's just really not fun to watch. They've been lifeless. I think the word is lifeless. And sucked.
It's not fun for all the reasons you said, but also because, you know, like the fight in quotes argument, if you want to call it that, or lack thereof, you know, we sat here after the Minnesota loss talking about leadership in the clubhouse and the approach. And like you said, it's just the same conversations as last year. And I think what makes it doubly frustrating, conscious or not, is the fact it's the same conversations only seven games in, which means there's a whole season of these conversations coming up where it's not even like, oh, okay, well, you know, it's, this is what they have to do to have success in the playoffs. Now we're set up for a whole year of just the same talking points, and that's just no fun. Like, at least be, if you're gonna be bad, at least be fun and interesting. They're just so predictable and boring in all senses of the words, and it's just so obvious. And like, the Schneider thing, I think, is a good point that, like, no, they aren't beholden to the fans, and they shouldn't be beholden to the fans, because you're listening to this podcast, you're listening to us talk, we're fans, we're dumb, we don't know anything.
So dumb.
But at the same time, it just saps any sort of compelling narratives, any sort of guys to get behind. Like, Davis Schneider has a whole fan section of the internet, which, again, 1000% not a thing to listen to make your lineup decisions, but also by ignoring it entirely, or even just ignoring what he did at the plate, and then after a year of like the defense guys who can't score and that not working so horrendously, as you say, coming out and being like, well, the matchups and the two guys can't hit. It just, you know, of course people are frustrated after seven games. It makes total sense. And it's, I think we'll get into this a bit later with a couple of the mailbag questions, but like, there was a specific scenario that might play out this season that I didn't think was going to play out, that after these first seven games, I'm like, this might be it. Like, it might be over.
Holy, this is supposed to be the free candy part of the season still. Like, it's supposed to, we're supposed to still 100%. Be like, no matter what happens, it's not a big deal. I don't know. That's part of what makes me so sad is like, this is supposed to be the part of the season where everyone laughs off everything that happens. And there are a lot of people that are, I'll say rightfully, pretty upset with how shit it is to watch day in, day out. And we're not even, they haven't played a home game yet. They haven't played in Rogers Center yet. They haven't played double digit games. There's guys who have not had double digit at bats. There's, you know, there's still so much free space on the bingo card we're supposed to be getting to. And people are already really bitter. And again, I think even as demure as this feels and this podcast has been, like, I think we're even then on the optimistic side of the divider line in terms of the people that are, because I'm still like, you know, again, a good series in the Bronx here. They play well against the Yankees and suddenly we're like, yeah, it feels good to beat the Yankees. They're frauds and we're going to play good baseball and come in here and beat Marcus Stroman and then beat Clark Schmidt and then beat Luis Yiel. Not a fun start schedule wise to go Rays, Astros, Yankees, Mariners. That's not my favorite thing to ever happen.
I disagree, actually. I think the schedule is great because this team is a continuation of last year. And like, obviously, you know, building momentum and confidence is a thing by starting with a different schedule. But also, like, I don't know, we're supposed to be a playoff contender. These other teams have to play us too. It's not like we're this poor baseball team that has to play the good teams first. Like, it's a two-way street here. Like, they also have to play us, and we're supposed to be, or we've been told that we are a competitive team. And, you know, if that's not the case, then that's not the case. But I don't think this argument of like, oh, it's a tough start. Like, I don't know, whatever. It is what it is.
It's not my favorite teams. If you're talking about teams that I would not want to watch.
Oh, sure. Yes.
I don't want to watch Seattle and I don't want to watch the Rays and I don't want to watch the.
Yeah, that's fair.
There's some positives. Barrios pitched very well in both of his appearances. I thought Gausman was great. Gausman was great. There's some minor collar tug on the first two Chris Bassett experiences. The left-handed batters that he is facing continue to be a real problem. We will see about Bowden Francis second time through against possibly the Yankees. Barrios very good. Gausman very good. Turner very good. Schneider is like the eighth best player in baseball history for the amount of at bats that he's taken. Other than that, though, I mean, you know, again, very small sample sizes, but it hasn't been a real joy. Thank God Vlad hit the 450-foot bomb. People would be all over him. And maybe they are still all over him. Nate Pearson didn't look very good. That part has sucked.
Yeah, Nate makes me sad.
What a bust. I wish that I felt better, but we've already had a position player pitch before we got a home game. Wes Parsons might not be on the team for very long. I don't know why he made the team in the first place, but not my call to make.
Spying time for Tiedemann and Yariel.
Let's take a quick. I'm gonna take a quick pause, and we'll come back, and I'm gonna ask you leave some concern on meters very quickly early on in the season. wanted to do this before the season started, about like in we'll name some players and we'll say if we're in or out on them this year. I know we did the I put my stake in the ground and I was like, I'm going to allow myself to get owned by George Springer this year. Mm. He's at 2 home runs. He has 3 hits, 2 of them are home runs, but I'm going to give you some guys that have, you know, got off to the starts they have. And I want you to tell me if you think this is a real long-term issue or this is a blip on the radar. My first one is Kevin Kiermaier. Are you at all concerned that Kevin Kiermaier might be on the way out here?
I mean, yes, and I don't expect anything from him at the plate to begin with. So it's hard for me to be like, oh,
it's
no.
A very mature attitude to have about
Kevin Kiermaier's not like Kevin Kiermaier's a league average hitter. That's who he is. That's who he's been pretty much his entire career. And so I would say I'm concerned, but he's not at the top of my list.
Sure.
Just because like he's last year he was for him great and he was league average. So
yes,
I don't know, him being not great to play through 6 games, just Kevin Kiermaier.
Yeah, and by not particularly great, we're talking about one for 18 with a 0.56 batting average. So it goes. Listen, I'm a little wary here, as he has not looked particularly good. Again, we're talking about a 20 plate appearance sample size. I'm sure it will go up. I'm sure his average will go up 400% from here. Like, is going to go from 50, from 0.56 to 250 probably, and that'll be no concern. But I do wonder about the Kevin Kiermaier. I don't want to say the fit, but even the necessity, with knowing how much value you can get from Varsho in center field, and what you could have done to get a left fielder to allow Varsho to be the center fielder and get your extra value that way. It's interesting if bringing back Kevin Kiermaier was the right call. Again, we're dealing in very small sample sizes, and I'm fully aware of that. Okay, what about
just to finish on Kiermaier, I didn't even think about it, but I think you're right. I think maybe it's less a concern, but maybe it's time to shift Kiermaier to the fourth outfielder role.
They don't have a third outfielder, James.
Schneider.
Oh boy.
What? Oh no, we're losing the defensive run saved and left when you're down 8. Who cares?
I know. The current thing is Schneider being basically there to hit lefties, with the missing caveat that there just aren't that many lefties in the American League anymore. There just aren't many. There's way less lefties in the American League than the National League.
Hit a home run off Josh Hader, and Kevin Kiermaier has 1 hit.
Off a left.
And Dalton Varsho isn't hitting. So, like, I don't know what you're losing by doing it right now.
That's a lefty, Josh Hader.
Is he really?
He is. Huh. That's why he was in there. That's why he got it done. Okay. Let's
ignore my point there, because
sure. Alejandro Kirk.
Oh, yeah. Super concerned.
It might just be over.
Yeah.
They might have got lightning in a bottle there for a hot minute. And
I mean, the one, I'm not going to say optimism, but my one hope for Alejandro Kirk is we saw last year, a little later in May last year, I think, whenever the first time Danny Jansen got hurt last year. Uh-huh. We saw Kirk's offensive numbers go down because he was catching every day.
Probably have an extra base hit in like the first.
Yeah.
God knows how long last year.
So I'm not fully willing to make a judgment call on Kirk till Jansen's back and he's not catching every day, because clearly that seems to affect him at the plate. However, I'm concerned just because I've been concerned about the guy for a year now.
Yeah, it took, he had 1 extra base hit in his first 26 games last year. It took him until May 5th to collect his second extra base hit, 8 home runs. So, yeah, I mean, listen, I think that's a valid, like, yeah, when he catches a lot, it ends up affecting his offense. The counter to that, of course, is that he is going to catch a lot because they don't have another guy to catch. And he certainly is. It's certainly like, oh, you know, put somebody else to catch so he can DH. What do you get what out of him as a DH?
He's what are you gonna pull Turner back now?
Goodness gracious. It's a problem. Alejandro Kirk not and listen, the legs are never going to buy him base hits. There was in that no hitter, there was a ball that deflected off two gloves and they still managed to get him out by several steps. Not my favorite. It's concerning. Alejandro Kirk is a concern for me because now we're talking about since the middle of 2022 is your sample size of him being a sub 700 OPS guy for a year and a half, which I don't love. Okay, Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
I mean, you have to be concerned, right? Like, he hit a bomb. Yes, he's getting out in the air more.
He's taking his walks.
He's got six walks already, which is great. But also, like, the approach is the same.
He's the exact same guy. as he was last year. Oh, no.
Like, not that it's a super telling stat anymore, but his big home run is his only RBI this year,
which is, you know,
when they don't hit, obviously there's not a lot of chances to have the RBIs. But you know, he looks the same
because, you know, Springer has three hits and two of his are home runs. So it's sort of like,
right.
Couldn't really be on base for any of the Vlad hits.
That's true. That's very true.
Five walks, but, including two in the no hitter game. But yeah,
he's just, it's very concerning. It's very concerning.
He's been the same dude, which is not making me happy. I think that's been I bought the approach in the spring.
Yeah.
I'm a fool. That's why.
I mean, you know, by OPS, he's the second best hitter on the team right now.
There's three guys with positive. there's three guys with above average OPS right now, and again, that OPS is inflated with the six walks.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay. What about Bo Bichette? Here's one for you. WRC plus since June 2023. This comes from our friend True RGM. WRC plus since June 2023. WRC plus famously sort of a catch-all offensive stat. Schneider, 182. Really incredible. 82% better than league average. Jansen, 139. Vlad, 115. Cabin, 115. Springer, 105. Bo, 102. Which is to say, since the Red Hart start to last year, Bo Bichette has sort of been a league average hitter in the second half of last year and beginning of this. I will add in he got hurt at the end of July. But your thoughts on the Bo Bichette start?
I mean, it's not encouraging. you know, when you start 3 for 20, it's not great.
Neck spasms.
Yeah. In seven games in. You know, I am not concerned yet. This isn't the first time we've seen a downswing from Bo Bichette, and every year it seems like he catches fire for a month or two and makes us forget all that. And like you said, the beginning of last year is a great example where he was red hot, so red hot to the point that he could have that second half that you just highlighted and still end up with a great year. So no, I'm not concerned about Bo yet. He's led the league in hits 2 years running. So, I guess he didn't lead him last year, but previous 2 years he did, and he was
would have very... had he not get he not gotten hurt.
Yeah, yeah. So no, I'm not concerned because Bo's job is just to put the ball in play, and so I'm not. When you have three seasons of just hitting the ball like he just did, he has earned. While the team as a whole has not, I think Bo has earned the. It's only seven games.
And only five for him. I'm with you. No real concerns on Bo Bichette. He is one that when the approach isn't working, it looks really bad. But the dude can hit. He can flat out hit. Is there anybody else that jumps to mind for you on
that
this
I'm
list?
Concerned about?
Or you would like to voice either I am concerned or I am not concerned?
Not really, because I think a lot of the other guys are pretty much what we expect, which is kind of the problem.
Sure.
I will say, though, we'll see what this lineup looks like when Danny Jansen's back.
Boy, can't get back fast enough.
The straw that stirs the drink.
You need him. You need him. Guys are running crazy. They're running all over Alejandro Kirk, the poor guy. Kirk's hitting ground balls, which is like he may as well not get out of the box. It's not fun. It is not fun. And again, because of the way the damn Houston series went, the offense looks great in two games. Like great.
Yeah.
Like really great. Like they scored 9 and 8 runs in the first two of the first four games. They just so happened to score basically none otherwise.
I will say, not to sort of piss on that fire immediately, last season they scored 10 runs in the first game as well.
Well, they scored 3 runs combined in their 4 losses. So you're going to know pretty well what it's going to look like. Okay. All that page turned on to New York. It is 3 games against the Yankees. Again, Kikuchi and Stroman, the Yankees are 6-1. Stop me if you've heard this before. The Yankees are 6-1. Yankees have Juan Soto. That's not too great. Don't love that for us. Not a big series, but a divisional series nonetheless, of which there are less than there ever were. What's your feeling and thoughts on the coming Yankees series right on time?
I mean, this could get a lot worse before it gets better. As much as I just said, I don't care about the schedule, from just from a vibes perspective, with the way things are, if they go in and get absolutely smacked by the Yankees, and Marcus Stroman and the Yankees at that, and Marcus Stroman and Juan Soto and the Yankees at that, it's not going to be pretty. Let's say that.
And then it's time for the home opener.
Hooray. Against Seattle. It's not Seattle, but if you want to keep yourself on an even keel, don't look up Lourdes Gurriel's stats to start the year.
Well, so it goes. You know, Gurriel has the moments. He has the moment. I didn't think in a million years Lourdes Gurriel would be the one that I was like, damn.
Yeah, really.
Although I could do the same thing. You could do the same thing with Teoscar, right? He's also
hit,
which I knew. That was when I knew. I knew Teoscar in Los Angeles was
going to
be a good start because he thrives as like fifth most important guy in the lineup. That is like absolute gold for him. He's got 4 home runs. Lourdes only has 3. So, I mean, it's going to be a battle all year long unless they are able to go and really go on a big run. I think that is the key takeaway, that it's going to be hard for them to get a ton of like real helium momentum this year unless they have a solid month plus where they're like 22-6. Like it's going to have to be something like that, because I don't know that fans are going to, as you mentioned, give them the benefit of the doubt. I don't know that a good series here and there is going to be enough, similar to the way it was last year. I don't know that we ever felt like they were rolling downhill at any point. And that inability to string together a winning or losing streak ended up sort of demarcating the entire season. I think that is going to work against them this year even more than it did last year, where people are going to be like, where's the big run? Where's the great? Like, because, you know, even Pittsburgh had it the other year. Even Detroit is having it this year. Like, it doesn't make you a mark of a good team, but it does certainly help you pick up momentum and earn some goodwill with the fan base, which they could certainly use a ton of. Right.
Well, I mean, we've seen worse Blue Jay teams than this garner the city with a good run.
Of course. Exactly right. Which is why not that we're writing them off, but like, I really want this to work. I can put myself in the shoes of the front office and see how frustrating it must be to watch the team play the way that they played. Because I can totally get the expectation for this working. It actually does make sense to me. Totally, like, quite frankly, I totally do get the big picture plan. It just refuses to work. It just refuses to work. And I hate it. I really hate it because
it's possible because half of it is a bad plan.
Well, it could be. Anyway. Three against the Yankees coming up. We're going to take a abbreviated break, and then we will answer some mailbag questions after this. All right, Jake, I'm going to open up the mailbag, and I'm going to assume that the mailbag is full of people that are feeling positive and finding the bright side.
Nothing but joy.
Let's take a look. As always, it's at Less Than Jays on Twitter. Mike Mack with some conspiracy. Was the lack of moves this offseason, doubling down on the roster, replacing leading free agents with worse options, done intentionally to make a potential pivot to rebuild easier? Either starting at the trade deadline or next offseason, depending on team record. What say you to that conspiracy theory?
I don't think so.
I can't imagine a world where they ruin the window.
I truly think, as you said, I don't necessarily agree with you, but as you said, you can see the plan.
Yes.
That they're trying to do. And I think they are so committed to this plan that I do not think they're doing anything to intentionally tank the roster for a rebuild.
Yeah.
If you want to argue on the validity of said plan and the success of it, sure. But no, I don't think the only thing I think that this core and this franchise has done that you can say is not even sinister, but just like not about the on-field product is, you know, Shapiro being here to redo the ballpark rather than to improve the team. And that's fine. But no, I don't think it was an intentional thing for the rebuild, but I do like the idea.
It's a fun theory. And I like the tinfoil hat already. I would say the reason that I don't think that it would be intentional is because were that to be the direction they go, Ross Atkins wouldn't be the one doing the rebuild. You know what I mean? It's like,
this is kind of that's pretty much my argument as to why Vlad won't be traded.
You're losing your job. If you're intentionally going into a rebuild, you are saying, okay, next GM, rebuild the team, because Atkins will be gone. If this team bottoms out, Atkins is gone. There's no question.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, despite records or whatever, Vlad's not getting traded at the deadline.
Goodness, no. Can you imagine what...
Even if they're bad.
I prepare to not be blown away by the return for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. if he gets traded.
That too.
Prepare to not get the next Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. trade. It'd be a little bit closer to the Roy Halladay return than people are thinking of. And finally, Max Beef, how many no-hitters will the Jays have this year? They've managed to get no hit back-to-back seasons, which I think is pretty neat.
I feel like they might have one more in them this year.
They got one more.
I feel like there's going to be like a early September one, and it's going to be at the hands of someone that just stings.
I mean,
it's going to be Stroman.
Legit, the guy was a 30-year-old with 8 career starts that they already got dropping.
Like a Marcus Stroman Yankees to put the division out of reach, no hitter.
Nasty. That's nasty work, Jake. Again, the last two were a 30-year-old with 8 career starts in the Detroit Tigers. Those are talking about. Hasn't exactly been like Justin Verlander the last two times. Boy. Okay. Well, that's it for now. I hope you enjoyed that, everybody. Hopefully we're back next week and they played well against the Yankees. All I'm asking to take 2 of 3. Is that
No, I think that's fair. And I think what's going to be fun, but also extremely annoying about this season. Hopefully is that each of our episodes will become completely irrelevant by the next one.
Feels good. Feels good to know. Not like before when they were.
Well, there's consistency before. I feel like this year it's really going to be like, this is the worst team, this is the best team week to week.
I hope we get it. This is the best team. So it's Yankees and Seattle. This time next week they'll have played 6 more games, and then Colorado and the Yankees at home. An extended homestand from the 8th to the 17th. We will see how they do on that. Thank you to everybody who put a question in. Thank you everybody who is back with us for another year. And thank you everybody for being a part of Less Than Jake.